Welcome to Full Potential, Thriving with Neurodiversities. I'm your host, Sarah Intonato. This podcast teaches parents of children with neurodiversities, such as autism, ADHD, learning disabilities, and beyond, to support their kids in reaching their full potential so that they can thrive, instead of letting stereotypes define them. My mission is to end suffering amongst these parents by giving them the tools to heal themselves, which in turn empowers them to be bold, confident advocates for their children. By addressing a variety of topics, such as well-being, advocacy, and spirituality, these parents stop being the victims of a broken system and instead succeed in providing their unique children with exactly what they need to thrive and share their gifts with the world. One by one, these families now change the world through their uniqueness instead of being victimized by it. Are you ready? Let's get started. Hello, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast, where I'm incredibly excited to have Laura Holland as a guest to talk about a crucial topic and one that many parents don't receive a lot of guidance on, and that is the topic of neurodiverse your children going through puberty. And neurodiverse, of course, encompasses individuals with autism, ADHD, and other neurodiversities as well. So don't feel like you can't listen or can't benefit if your child does not have autism specifically. This is going to benefit probably parents of neurotypical kids as well. But I'm thrilled that Laura is here with me, and I wanted to geek out over her qualifications a little bit because she is such a powerhouse. So Laura, like me, is a resident Long Islander, but she works both virtually and in person as well. And Laura has a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology, Child Development. She also has a Master of Science in Health Education, and she has a Sexual Health Certificate Program from the University of Michigan as well. She is a professional member of the American Association of Sexuality Educators. And I remember I found Laura because my son is 12, almost 13. He was starting to go through puberty. And in some areas, he had really good guidance and support. In some areas, he didn't. So I started researching help. And I wasn't finding any until I found Laura through a referral of a colleague we have who lives in Long Island. And I went to her website and I immediately felt myself exhale because she phrased so beautifully, neurodiverse individuals deserve to know about their bodies. They deserve to understand what's happening as they grow and change, and why shouldn't they receive guidance and support around that, just like all the neurotypical kids do. So Laura, welcome. Is there anything you would like to add? Well, I already remembered. I'm going to add something. Laura is not just an expert in her field. She's also a parent to a neurodiverse child as well. So she's right there with you doing all of this stuff that she knows on a professional level. So Laura, welcome. Please add anything that I forgot.
Thank you so much. And thank you for this opportunity, Sarah, to come on your podcast and talk to your parents. I'm really just thrilled to be here. So thank you for that. So in addition to the qualifications and trainings that I've done, I also am, I do the Our Whole Lives curriculum for the Unitarian Universalist Association. And that's a curriculum that is, it's considered a religious curriculum in sexuality that is, it's kind of amazing. And it crosses the lifespan from birth through, as far as we can go, talking about, healthy relationships, our bodies, taking care of our bodies, different kinds of romantic relationships and such. And I've had an opportunity to work with typically developing teens in our local fellowship here in Huntington. It was an amazing experience. So I work with a lot of young people, which is kind of awesome. So you did mention that I'm a parent. I think that in terms of all of my qualifications for me, I think the most important one I have is that I am the parent of an adult child with an intellectual and developmental disability. My son is turning 21 in February, which seems
you look too young for that.
Crazy. Thank you. I feel that. I also have an 18-year-old neurotypical daughter. And so I think it's important, like, how did I get here? And how I got here is like a lot of the parents and what you were just saying is I was looking for a sexuality curriculum for my own son through the public schools. And we lived up in New Hampshire and Massachusetts for several years and moved back to Long Island about 7 years ago. And from school to school, I was saying, you know, as my son is starting to develop and going into puberty, pre-puberty, puberty, adolescence, adulthood, you know, what kind of sexuality education do you offer for kids that are not mainstreamed? And I unilaterally got there really wasn't anything, maybe some type of kind of watered down puberty lessons. But overall, most kids that are in a self-contained classroom, which means like they're not with the general curriculum or general population, they don't have access to the same type of curriculum in terms of sexuality education. So this is something I'm finding across the country. And so it's not unique to this region of the country. And in my quest, to make a very long story short, the school district here on Long Island had agreed to hire an agency who would provide a curriculum that was specifically designed for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to my son, which was amazing. And I was asking them some questions about it because I have a background in health education, which is kind of under the realm of public health, so I can develop and teach various programs. And I heard about this program and started to look into it. And I went and I did a long weekend training in this particular curriculum. And then I came back to Long Island, and the agency that was going to work with my son, unfortunately, the special educator who was going to teach him moved. Mm. And they said to me, well, we don't have anybody now, but you just did the curriculum, right? And I said, yes. And they said, any chance you want to teach the class? Like, what does that mean? So what they had done is this agency here, PBS, Positive Behavior Supports, they were doing a campus-based experience at Stony Brook University for adult learners that had intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I taught their first classes in healthy relationships and human sexuality. Mm-hmm. I taught two terms at Stony Brook, and my son was one of my first students. And my son uses sign language to communicate primarily. So he sat in the back of the classroom, pretended like he didn't know me. And I pretended like I didn't know him. And I'm like, in the back, you know, and he raised his hand. And so we went through the curriculum from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And I taught all of these young people who were mostly in their early 20s. And, you know, the classes were in healthy relationships and human sexuality. So it's when I say that I'm a sexuality educator, like, what does that mean? I don't teach people about a particular sexual act. It's more about what's going on in your bodies. First of all, what are the names of your body parts? What's the function of those body parts? How do we keep our bodies healthy? Because if we don't know what they're called and we don't know what they're supposed to do, how do we know if something goes wrong? Right. So first it's being able to identify, you know, how do I talk about my body in a respectful way, but also using medically accurate terms that professionals will understand. Yeah. And I went through this curriculum that is really excellent. And then I started to look at other curriculum that people were developing across the country. And then through my own just background, you know, blending things and changing it depending on, you know, who the learners were in my class. So out of that spawned a whole realm of classes that I'm doing individually and small group working with people that are as young as 5 and currently as old as 40. So right now I have a range of people that I'm working with. And I think it's been really interesting to see how little the schools are teaching to anybody who's got a disability, or how much they understand. Because even if they do sit in a regular education health class, I know my daughter did, and even that went over her head, and she's neurotypical. And so to expect that somebody who has a different way of learning to understand sort of the ways that we talk around sex.
Right.
As a, for instance, and I've heard this a lot of times in classrooms, when they do sex ed, they'll use a banana and they put a condom on the banana.
Right.
And this has been reported back to me that there was a couple that had autism, adult couple, and they decided to engage in a physical relationship, and they got out their banana and they put the condom on, and then they had unprotected sex.
Right.
Because that information that wasn't generalized, it was like, but we put the condom on the banana like we were taught.
Right.
And nobody said, but the banana represents something else.
Right.
So, you know, when I meet with the people that I'm teaching now, it's very matter of fact. And I think that that's something that I try to help parents with, is that we talk around these things because we're uncomfortable, but it's really important that we're very straightforward of like, when I'm saying the banana actually represents a body part.
Right.
And use that because we don't have the body part to use.
Right.
And it makes people uncomfortable. But we need to actually say what that is because it may be missed. So
I'm so glad that you said that. You know, I grew up Catholic. And so my parents talked about sex and puberty in a very sterile way. And I was mentioning this to a friend of mine. They're like, at least your parents talked to you. I didn't know anything. So like, I got the very sterile, you know, like proper names for everything. There was no discussion of pleasure or anything like that, but it was very much like, this is what you have to do. This is, you know, how we do it. This is the result, you know? So it was very sterile, but at the same time effective, because my parents were secure enough to use proper names for things. And I was neurotypical, so I was able to understand exactly what they were saying. But if you take that into a group environment and not everyone learns the same way, you're going to have a situation exactly like what you just described.
Right. And honestly, it can be traumatizing because if you've never said these words and you think they're dirty words, because maybe somebody said, you can't say penis, you know, or you can't say vulva, or you can't say these words, they're like, oh, you know, so sometimes it's just saying the words over and over and getting them all out there, which is one of the exercises I do with my students, is I get all of the slang words out. And those are really easy. Everybody gets a slang out. That's really, you know, you have to put this all over a board and they're like, whoa. And then it's like, but what is that? What's the medically accurate word for that? And they're like, what? We're not allowed to say that word. That's a dirty word. I'm like, you can say, you know, you know, your hoo-ha or your coochie or your, you know, vajayjay, but you can't say vagina or vulva. And they're like, you know, so it kind of getting over that, because we've been taught, you know, in all of our homes, we have these like colloquial terms or slang words that we use for body parts, and that's fine. They also need to know what the medically accurate word is, this, so that they know what we're talking about. And one of the other things I do is I do a lot of parent workshops, mostly through the special ed parent teacher associations across Long Island. And I've done that across our state as well. And I do a 90-minute workshop on how to talk to your kids about sex. Mm. And it's specifically designed for parents who have a child with some type of a disability, because the way that we teach sex and we talk about it is very different to somebody who has a different way of learning. And the first exercise that I do is looking at what messages we received from our parents when we were kids about sex, whether it was spoken or unspoken. And that's really helpful, I think, because a lot of parents go into this like, well, my parents didn't talk to me, or they were really shaming, or, you know, I got a lot of negative messages. So now what?
Right.
You know, the other thing is, a lot of people don't have a background in sexuality, so they don't know the answers. Like, what do I say? How do I, my kid comes to me with this question and I'm not sure if they're going to understand the answer because they have a different style of learning. And I don't really know the answer, and nobody talked to me about this, and I'm really uncomfortable. So it's just kind of initially getting a little more comfortable with, let's take a big deep breath. You don't have to have all the answers. You're not going to have the big sex talk all in one talk. It's going to be a lot of talks over the course of many years, probably.
Thank you for saying that, because I think so many parents intimidate themselves when they start to see their child's body changing a little bit, or their friends starting to mature a little bit, and they think, oh, I'd better have the talk. And in their mind, they think of it as one talk that covers everything, which of course is not really possible, especially because maybe an 8 or 9 year old who's just starting to get like one or two body hairs is going to have a different level of emotional maturity than a 12 or 13 year old. And in terms of what they can understand, whether they're neurotypical or neurodiverse too. So I love that you just took the pressure off all the parents, and we don't have to do it in one conversation, guys.
And you should, right? It's a, look, there are kids, and anybody who's listening to your podcast right now, or comes to any of my workshops, they're there to learn. Right. They're there to say, I don't know how to do this. So help me to do this. And the first thing I say is, look, I'm a parent first. These conversations didn't come easily for me. I didn't know all the answers. I didn't know how to even address this or gauge if my son understood what the heck I was talking about. I just knew that his body was changing. Right. And if people don't get anything else out of this, it's important to understand that typically when sexuality education is taught or we're talking about changes in the body's puberty, oftentimes in public schools, they teach to what they believe is, where the person is developmentally. Right? So they'll say, well, this person is, let's say, 12, but really they are more on like a younger, they are more like an 8-year-old when it comes to learning and understanding, right? So what they'll do is they'll water it down to what they think they can understand.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at what's happening in their bodies as a 12-year-old, it's the same thing that's happening with their 12-year-old friends that are neurotypical, right? So what's happening biologically in their bodies is the same thing that's happening with their same age peers. And I think this is where there's a huge breakdown, because if you look at somebody and you say, well, I know that that's happening, but they're not going to understand what we're talking about. So we're only going to teach them the names of their body parts, but we're not going to teach them that what's happening in their bodies is normal and healthy.
Yeah.
And explain all of the changes that are happening. And that the way that we teach it is going to be different for sure.
Yeah. Right?
So we may need several lessons, and we may need a lot of visuals, and we may need videos and coloring pages and all kinds of different activities and ways that we are going to teach the material, but the information is the same. So the need for the same information, right?
Yeah.
The need for the same information. And I think that's where, again, based on biological age, on their biological age. So I think that's a very important thing for parents to get that, you know, where do we start? You know, parents always ask me like, where do we start? You start where they're at. First of all, they have questions, whatever questions they come at you with, that's where you start. Right. And I always answer a question with a question. So, for instance, if your, let's say 12-year-old comes to you and says, where do babies come from? And you're like, oh no, this is the time. This is the talk. I've been waiting for 12 years. I'm ready. Okay. And you've got the diagrams and you've got the videos and you've got the whole thing. You're ready. My suggestion is to say, where do you think babies come from? So what this does is this gauges what information they already have. And I've done this because I created a program that I taught in a local public school last year. And I had several questions saying, where do babies come from? And I gave them three options. And the options were the stork, kissing, egg meets sperm. The majority of students chose the stork or kissing. Almost nobody chose egg meets sperm. Okay. So if your 12-year-old says, well, the stork drops off the baby, or we go to pick up a baby at a hospital, you know that you're starting at the very, very beginning basics, because they have no idea that there are people even involved in this scenario, right? If they say, well, you get pregnant by kissing. Okay, we're closer, right? We're warmer, but there's still a lot of missing parts. And obviously a baby doesn't come from kissing.
Right.
And if they say, well, I think, you know, two people come together, maybe they take their clothes off, they're in a bed, you know, maybe they use the word sex, and you're like, okay, well, what does that mean to you? You're asking more questions to gauge like, okay, now where do I start? So you're closer to the conversation that we thought we were going to have. But if they're thinking that they go to a hospital and you pick up a baby, or it comes from the stork and you go to egg meat sperm, you're going to traumatize them. It's too much. It's an overwhelming, scary conversation. So I think for parents, it's really important to say, what do you think it is? And it's just really to gauge where we're starting, how much information they have. Maybe they've seen something on TV, or they heard something at school or on the bus, and you're like, okay, we're a little closer. Like I remember coming home. I think I was 7, and I said to my dad, I heard the F word means having babies. And he was like, okay, go talk to your mother. So I did. And she was like, okay, she got the diagram, the whole thing. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm like, but how does the sperm get to the egg? And then she told me that piece, and I went, gross, you know, and that was like the end of it for me. But you know, it was, I did come with some information. It was misinformation, but it, I, I had a jump off point. So they kind of knew where to go. And then my mom took it from there. And then, you know, that was probably the last conversation she ever had. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, oftentimes that's what I suggest to parents is just kind of start where they're at. And if they don't come to you with questions, because not every kid is going to, start with what you think is age appropriate.
Right.
You know, if you have kids that are in elementary school or even, you know, preschool, you start with body parts. That's a great place to start to normalize. Let's talk about, we do the eyes, ears, nose, mouth, or why aren't we saying, you know, breasts, penis, scrotum, you know, vulva, you know, which may be a word that people here aren't even familiar with because for whatever reason in our culture, we talk about penis and vagina when really the external genitalia is the vulva. And that's something that we don't talk about or correct when we're talking to people. They just don't know. And that's okay too. So, you know, I teach that, the anatomy, but, you know, teaching basic anatomy so that it's not a taboo topic. And why do we have these parts? And then you also mentioned pleasure, which is something that nobody talks about. And yet we are biologically designed to have pleasure. And somehow we've attached shame to that. So that's also a part of like, and that's normal and that's healthy. And these are the kinds of words that I use when I talk to people.
I love that because, you know, my son is 12. He's starting to have different experiences with his body parts that are totally age appropriate. And I never grew up with a brother, you know, so I am sort of watching and going, oh, whoa, here we are already. And so I'm just reminding myself to remind him, this is normal. And in the privacy of your room, you can explore yourself and your body however you wish, and you can figure out what makes you feel a certain way in this environment that is safe for you. But, you know, I know a lot of people who are listening have children who have limited communication ability or verbal ability. And so their kids may not be coming to them with questions, but I always think about, well, what can I do in this moment? Well, I can remind him that environment matters. You're totally welcome to explore your body parts in the privacy of your own shower by yourself or your own bedroom by yourself at this age that he's at. But you can't do that at the shower at the pool, you know, or you can't do that in your bedroom if someone else is there because it's probably an adult who's, you know, saying goodnight to you or something like that. So when you're a parent, you may not be having major conversations with a child who his communication is limited, but it doesn't mean you can't teach them and remind them in ways that, you know, they can process and understand. And I also have to recognize that someone pointed out to me, you know, Sarah, you're so lucky you have a boy who's neurodiverse, who's going through puberty. How do I explain to my daughter who's 8 that in a couple of years, she's going to menstruate and, you know, she can't communicate back to me, you know, in terms of if I asked her a question, she's still working on communicating her basic needs and wants. How could I start to create a healthy dialogue with her, acknowledging her abilities in terms of communication, but also respecting that her body is going to undergo these changes in an age-appropriate fashion? And I love that people are starting to be aware of this. And I would love any insights you have on that.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting as you're talking about that, because it's funny when my son was in fifth grade, his special educator was super excited to tell us about this special puberty video that they had. They didn't create it, but the school district was using it. And this was in the self-contained classroom. And it's so special. She kept saying, and I want you, you know, to go home and watch it before we present it to your son so that, you know, you're in the know. And I was like, oh, this is wonderful. You're like, you've, you know, created this whole curriculum. So we watched it and it was, you know, it was cartoon characters showering. And my son was sort of amazed that, you know, about this, why would they be talking about shampooing and deodorant and all these things? And I said, because not everybody has their mom in the bathroom with them, you know, haunting them saying, you need to put the shampoo in you. You know, which we're past now, but at those days I was in there haunting him. And then like the changing of body parts and, you know, they were showing, you know, different body parts, you know, the breasts getting larger or the scrotum growing or, you know, these different things. So he was kind of like, okay. And then they got to, this lesson on nocturnal emissions. And for people who don't know what that is, it's a wet dream. And they had, you know, a cartoon character in bed And then all of a sudden they had these, I guess it was supposed to be sperm with top hats and canes. And they came out doing a song and a dance. Dun, 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 dun,
oh my God.
And I was like, I'm sorry. And my son's dad said, okay, so if he has a wet dream, he's going to say, I didn't hear any music. And where is their top hats? Where's their cane? Like, right. What is this? Now, it seems really cute and funny.
Sure.
If you're, you know, a parent listening to this, but it's not cute and funny for the person who's watching it that can't generalize that. Right. Right? So for my son, he was like, that's sort of terrifying. Like, I don't want these cartoon guys coming out of my penis, right? When it was really important for us to say, hey, buddy, during your sleep, you might wake up and there's going to be some white sticky fluid in your underwear. You didn't pee yourself. It's okay. It's normal. Not a big deal. Let us know. And we'll just, you know, we'll change your sheets and you can put on clean underwear and clean pajamas, or you can throw it in the wash. But this is totally normal. It happens to boys all the time. Not a big deal. So we try to be preemptive in saying that to him before it happened. Because also we are finding that people with disabilities are going into puberty sometimes earlier than their typically developing peers. So where, you know, the average age for menstruation might be around 12, it might happen 8 or 9 years old and you're not ready for it, right? And you're like, wait, what happened? And I've had school nurses say, you know, why aren't parents talking to their kids? Because their daughter with autism came in and thought she was bleeding to death because nobody said this could happen, right? Yeah. So it's really important that we at least begin to have these conversations, like, don't be afraid, this could happen. Mm-hmm. Maybe even start sending them with pads, even though, you know, that might feel uncomfortable. It's something you could talk to your pediatrician about too. Sure. Like, if they can gauge in their annual physical kind of, do you have any sense of when this might start happening? And that is something that they can do, because they can look at, you know, the external genitalia and give you kind of a sense of when this might happen. Yeah. So it's good for parents, just be a little prepared, but at least be prepared with some kind of conversation, which is, I always think it's a little bit easier if we do it before than when they come in and they're like, what's going on with all the drama? Right. You know, be proactive, not reactive when we can, but at least have some basics. So I mean, even for puberty, I mean, it can start as early as like 8, 9 years old. That's when the beginning changes start to happen. And it's like, it can be very, very scary. And, you know, for people that might be in my demographic, a lot of us have, you know, entered into menopause, which is no fun. And I often talk about that as a way to relate to somebody going into puberty is, you know, all of a sudden you go, I don't know this body. This isn't my body. I've got, my body feels warm and then it feels cold and things are changing and I've got, you know, belly fat or my breasts are tender, or now I don't have a menstrual cycle, or, you know, my emotions are high and low and maybe I have acne and all these things. You're like, what the heck is going on? And I feel like I'm in this emotional roller coaster where I don't recognize myself. Yeah. And I say to parents all the time, think about puberty. We're kind of far removed from it at this point. But if these changes are going on in your body right now, you might say, oh my gosh, that's what they're going through, where they're going, I don't recognize myself. I don't know what's going on. And I also have other stuff going on, maybe some sensory processing things going on, or a difficulty in explaining with language what's happening in my body. And maybe I'm suddenly having some behaviors where I'm really anxious or I'm irritable and everybody's saying, what's wrong with them? There's nothing wrong with them. They're having hormonal rushes in their body that they don't understand. It's new and it can be really, really scary. And if we can look back and say, oh gosh, I remember that. I don't know anybody that would go back to middle school. Okay. We had zits and nothing, our clothes didn't fit. And we didn't look like this. Right. Yeah. And we were like highs and lows and everybody was, there's all this drama and chaos and right. These things that were going on, because puberty is really challenging. And then out on that, you have a different learning style. That can be really hard to understand what's going on and how do I talk about what's going on? So sometimes it's just coming in with a basic understanding of us already knowing that this is going to happen, preparing ourselves for it, and then being able to say, okay, this is a time where, all right, you're going to need to use deodorant because you're going to stink. And that's okay. And that's normal. I went through it too. And everybody goes through it. Not a big deal. And being very matter of fact about things, I think most parents find really helpful. And I know that our kids find it helpful.
Totally.
Talking around it above, they don't get it. They don't get it.
No.
And guess what? Like I said, that I've taught for our the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm going to tell you that working with kids that have disabilities is way easier than neurotypical kids any day of the week. Because the typical kids come in and they're like, I know everything. I learned on TikTok and YouTube and Snapchat, and I know all this and that and the other thing. But they're pretty shut down around it, and they don't love when I talk about things directly, and they get really embarrassed. Whereas the kiddos that I work with that have intellectual and developmental disabilities, they're very matter of fact. They come and they want to know. This is happening with my body. What's happening? Got a hair here. My boobs are growing. Things are going on. I don't really know. I was in school and I got this erection. And what do I do about that? Like, they're very clear about it. So typically, I think a lot of people with autism lack some social awareness.
Yeah.
And that's not a terrible thing when we're talking about this topic, because they probably won't be embarrassed. We're embarrassed as the parents, but the kids are not embarrassed. They're very matter of fact. They want to understand what's happening. Why is it happening? What do I do about it? And it can be a very matter of fact, like you were saying with your parents, sort of sterile, but just very matter of fact, straightforward, quick and dirty. Here you go. And they'll be like, they will get it.
It's true. I've seen this in my own life with my son. Whenever I've said, oh, hey, we're going to discuss the difference between public and private spaces and what you're allowed to do in public and what you're allowed to do in private. We discuss it. Like, any questions? How's it feeling? Good. Okay. Carry on. And then honestly, we rarely have to discuss it ever again. It's like, message received. We're good. Whereas with my daughter, who's 11, neurotypical, so they're 18 months apart, also starting to go through puberty, I've said like, hey, you know, like, tell me what you know about sex and how babies are made. And she's like, ew, mom. And like, doesn't even want to go there with me. I haven't even cracked that open yet in terms of figuring out what she knows or what, you know, I'm assuming she knows everything because every kid now knows everything. But it's so funny how even to engage in the conversation, she's got the embarrassment. He doesn't. She's got like the awkwardness about it. He doesn't. He's just like, okay, this is what I need to know. Great. Carry on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm noticing that what you said is absolutely true, for sure.
It's amazing. And I think too, like, again, talking about, you know, neurodivergent people, they tend to also be very rules-based. Mm. So if we just set up like time and place, right? Because I've heard you talk about that private versus public, you know, and a few lessons. If we're expecting that, we say, if you enjoy self-pleasure in public, that might make people feel uncomfortable. That person may or may not care about that. It's not because they're a bad person. It just may not be something that is meaningful to them.
Sure.
But if you say, if you, you know, pleasure yourself in public, you won't be allowed to go to that place anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm. Or you'll lose, you know, privileges for your electronics, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're not going to be allowed to go to grandma's house anymore, or they're not going to let you go in the movies or various things, or go on the school bus. Now it's a rules-based, you know, so that seems to land a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, look, this is just the way that it is. You can't do that in the living room because that's a public place. And what makes it public is people can come in and out of that space. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about private versus public, you know, a public space, even though it's your home, if somebody could enter the room at any given time, that's not a private space. A private space is your room with the door closed, unless you're sharing a room, in your bathroom with the door closed. And I would also say, not on Zoom, not on Google Classroom. And I say that because during COVID, there were a lot of young people, unfortunately, that got into some trouble because we had told them to go into their room with the door closed, but we never said not on video.
Sure.
Right? And so now we're having people, you know, self-pleasuring in the middle of a school day, you know, and the whole classroom can see it. Right. So I think it's really important that we also offer this lesson. It's really important that you don't do that on a video as well, or on your phone or whatever, you know, and it's about safety. And so that's what I'll say. I'd like you to be safe and responsible. Mm-hmm. You know, that's part of the lesson around private and public is when and how. For my clients who are not readers or writers, I use picture schedules. Sometimes even for, you know, what we call private time, we'll create a like a social story around that, or actually a schedule. where it's like at right before bedtime, I get 10 minutes of private time. And that means the door is closed and we knock on it and we wait for them to say yes or no, that you can come in. I know some families don't like to have locked doors and that's perfectly fine. So you have to honor that. No, I only walked into my son's room once without waiting to hear. I won't do that again. So don't go looking for trouble, but you know, we do have a rule. We knock and we wait. And if he says mm-hmm or no, then we know, you know, he needs a moment, which is completely fine. So sometimes even setting up a schedule. Pinterest has amazing social stories with pictures. Mm-hmm. If people go on and you just look up sexuality on Pinterest, there's several speech pathologists and special educators who have created storyboards around hygiene. Puberty, private time and such, that's excellent. Also there's it's teachers pay teachers and it's like somewhere between like $2 to $4 for educational materials that are picture based, and people can go on that as well. It's teachers pay teachers, and you can just look up again sexuality, puberty, or hygiene. And there's lots of great resources because some of us are great at these things, some of us not so much. There's another resource, it's called Board Maker. A lot of schools have Board Maker. There's now, it's all online, it's digital. So you can get a, I think it's a monthly subscription, or you can do a 30-day free trial. I would suggest you do that, get as much as you can. and sometimes your school, if anybody here, you know, their school has that, you can also ask your speech pathologist or behavioralist if they'll help. And basically you can create your own storyboards, again, around hygiene or, you know, body changing or private time or whatever it is, you know, different steps to take care of your body. So that's a, that's an awesome way to use pictures. And whether or not the people that I work with, are verbal or nonverbal, I always think that pictures are a great way to reinforce teaching. Another resource that I really like is, it's a company called amaze.org, AMAZE.org. That you can just look that up online, and they have YouTube videos. They started doing this several years ago, and now they're educationally based sexuality videos for young people, and they're great. They're cartoons. And I find they're really affirming. This everything from, you know, learning your body parts to being to gender assignment to sexuality, reproduction, you name it, they've got it. For some of the people that I work with, it can be hard to for them to understand, to generalize, because it is a cartoon and they kind of do talk around things. But it's a great way, honestly, for parents to learn. And some of us don't know all of these things. So it's a good way for us to learn and maybe watch it with our kids and see what they think. And then we can fill in the missing pieces for, oh, when they're saying that, they actually mean this. And we can explain to them that they're kind of talking around it. But I find those videos to be really, really helpful. And it's most parents find that they actually, I've learned a lot, but that they learn a lot too. So it's there's some great resources, there are great books. And, people that are way more skilled that have done these things. So there's no need for us to try to recreate the wheel. We could just go and borrow what's already out there.
Yes, I'm so glad that you highlighted that too, because I think that's one of the sticking points for many parents, is they literally don't know where to start. So to your point of start with a question and then figure out where the starting point actually is, and then give yourself some resources that can help you take a couple steps forward from that particular starting point, instead of just whirling in your head about it, you know, or making it about you and what you know, instead of what your child actually needs to know at the age.
The thing is, like, if your kids ask a question, they never ask in a good time. You know, they ask when grandma's grandma's there, and it's like, what's a nocturnal emission? And grandma's like, you know, like when you're driving, like, where do babies come from? You're like, you know, war of authority, you're like, oh, blah, blah. And then what we typically do is we just blurt something out, right? Because we don't know. So I have a great strategy. First of all, I have no poker face. So when somebody asks me a shocking question, I go, oh, I always do it. So I go, and that's usually just me trying to hold my mouth closed. And I go, that's a great question. And it gives me a chance to breathe. Great question. Okay. Because what we want to do is we want to be affirming. Doesn't matter what the question is. You might go, holy hats, I can't believe they just asked me that.
Yeah.
Take a breath. I don't care what it is. Just say, that's an excellent question.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're letting them know, okay, I'm interested in what you have to say. Take a breath. And you might say, I really want to give you a great answer. This is not the place for me to have this conversation with you. Can we chat? Okay, you need to pick a time. You can't just be like never or sometime later, after dinner, bedtime, when we get home. Okay. Great question, but not in front of grandma. So as soon as we get home, I'm happy to sit down with you and complete this conversation. Okay. So give a time of when you're going to do that. Take a big, deep breath, go look it up. Okay. Go to Amaze, go online. We got Google, look it up, call me, be like, Laura, this is a big one. Okay. Get a couple of answers and then sit down and say, okay. I'd like to sit down with you now that I've caught my breath and I have an answer. You don't have to have all the answers, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be clear. We want to use simple language. Yeah. We don't want to muddy it up. But I think the first thing is, what's the message that we want to deliver? A lot of us didn't receive any message. And if we did, it was often, you know, a negative message. Yeah. So the first message, if anybody's listening to your podcast, they want to give a positive message. They want their kids to feel good. We want our kids to feel good.
Yeah.
The first thing is, okay, great question. Let me think about the answer. And I might say, you know what? I really do want to give you a good answer and I need to think about it for a couple of minutes. Can I get a couple of minutes? And maybe you need to get something that's picture-based to look at. Maybe you want to get a video. Maybe you want to grab a book. Maybe you just want to sit down and share a story.
Yeah.
Sometimes when kids are asking questions, they just want to know, am I normal? Is this normal? Does this happen to everybody? They're scared, right? Or they're confused or they're anxious. They just want to know, like, is this going to happen to me? Cause I heard this thing. What does this mean? And it's also an opportunity for us to share with our kids, stories about ourselves, our beliefs, our values. As an educator, that's grossly inappropriate. I don't share my values or my belief systems with my clients. That's for their parents. But as a parent, when my daughter started talking to me and asking questions, that was a wonderful opportunity for me to talk about dating, love, romance, first kisses, handholding, all the good, yummy stuff that we, you know, can look back on and remember. So it also gives you an opportunity to embed some of the wonderful, rich stories about yourself that you might want to share with your kids and some of the values or beliefs that you have, whether they're cultural beliefs or religious beliefs. It's a wonderful opportunity to also embed that in it in a positive light as we're talking about these things. So it doesn't, it's not like we have to sit down and just be like very like mechanical about, oh, this is what's happening with your body. You might say, gosh, when I got my period the first time, it was a nightmare. You know, I was in science class and I had this mess and I was so embarrassed and, you know, whatever the thing is, right? So it could be this thing, like I'm a person too. And I remember saying to my daughter, cause she said the health lady said that it's this magical time in your life.
Hmm.
And I said, okay, she's crazy. It's not magical. It kind of stinks. You're going to get cramped. You're not going to feel good. Your pants aren't going to zip up. I'm going to come to you with chocolate and a heating pad and hugs and it's going to be okay. And she was like, thanks, mom.
It's so sweet. I love this. Yeah. Being able to insert your own perspective into it. Because I remember my daughter very recently said, you know, mom, when I get my cycle, you know, what should I use? A tampon, pad? They make period underwear now, a cup. And, you know, I said, well, she's like, what did you use when you first got your period? And I said, well, when I was a kid, the only options were tampons and pads. I said, you're so lucky. Mm-hmm. Now you have so many choices. Like, let's look at some options and see what you feel comfortable starting with. And I'll keep them in the house. And that way, when it's time, they'll be here and you can try it. And the good thing is that if you try it and you don't like it, you can always try something else. Right. But, you know, I had to say, like, I didn't even try some of those until I was older because they didn't exist until I was older, which of course made me feel ancient, but, but it was cool for her to be like, oh, wow, how great that I have some options and I can see what feels good to me. And it was interesting watching her, even at 11, sort of talk herself through some options, like, well, I'm on the swim team, so it might be better to do options A and B instead of options C and D. And I was like, yeah, you know, when you can try them all and use some at swimming and you can use some when you're home and you can see what you like. So it was really interesting to let her sort of verbally process with me in a way and like ask for my opinion, but not need my opinion to be the deciding factor for her.
Right. Well, it's also, you're also normalizing it, right?
Right.
This is something that happens. Okay. This is just something that happens. And if you understand that in advance, how do we prepare for that thing that could possibly happen? Now, look, if you missed the boat and she came and she's like, "Mom, I'm bleeding to death." You'd be like, okay. Didn't think this was going to happen so soon. So for those parents that are like, "I already missed that," or "I messed up," I think we don't know what we don't know. So this is not about, "Hey, you didn't do it right." No, this is about, "I'm going to give you some information. Like I got information, like you got information," right? Like we're just sharing information, and this is just another way to do it. So if you've done it a different way, there's nothing wrong with the way that you did it. You did it the way that you knew how to do it, or that you figured out how to do it, and good for you for doing it, right? I think as parents, especially when we have a kiddo who has a disability of sorts, we have we carry a lot. And this is another thing. Wow, this is another thing that I have to know. And another thing I have to figure out how to teach them. And my other kids didn't need this. And why can't somebody else teach them this? I get it. Why can't they? Because they just don't, because we haven't gotten that far. I am working in schools and I do work with educators and I do staff trainings and educator trainings. And there are so many amazing parents and educators and professionals are like, "We need more information so that we can support all of our kids in the schools, you know, and outside of school in getting them this information." But, you know, it's few and far between. So yeah, as parents, this is another thing we have to learn. Sorry. Okay. And how can we do it in a way that we can feel good about it?
Yeah.
And this is it. This is the beginning. It's like we learn, we try to get prepared, we take some deep breaths, we ask for help. It's okay to get embarrassed. You're going to get embarrassed. I talk to my own kids. I do giggle. My face gets red. I don't do that with other people's kids. It's a professional hat versus like the mom hat. You know, I'm like, "Oh, what are you asking me right now?" Like, "Oh," you know, it can be super embarrassing. Again, it never happens in the classroom. It happens out in the world. And I'm like, "Ay, ay, ay." So, you know, it's okay to laugh. It's okay to be human. It's okay to say, "I don't know." You know, what kind of message do we want to give? Take a big deep breath. You're doing an amazing job and they're going to get it. And if you mess it up the first time, trust me, you'll have plenty of opportunities for more conversations where you can say, "Okay, this one I'm going to get right. Like I feel good about this one. And I feel a little more comfortable in this." But I think the point is, anything that you do with your kids, when you're opening up this kind of dialogue, is showing them, "I'm here. I'm interested. I may not have all the answers. I may be uncomfortable, but I'm willing to be in this with you and we're going to figure it out." Okay. Yeah. We're going to like your daughter with the various, you know, things that she can use. We're going to figure it out. Okay. And I'm going to do the best that I can. And I want you to know that, you know, till the end of time, you can still come back to me and we can have these kinds of conversations. And I will say that before I started, in sexuality education, I had a lot of concerns for my son because he has a high level of need and he is, he's so trusting of people. And I just worry about, you know, him being taken advantage of by people and will he understand and will he have romance and love and all these things that, you know, as parents, we sometimes let go of our hopes and dreams for our kids when we get a diagnosis. And the more that I learn, and the more that I teach him and the more knowledge I have, the more empowered I feel. And I know the more empowered he feels. Like, he's like, "Are you going to get me a girlfriend now?" And I'm like, "This is my job." And I do feel, after I've been doing this with him for 4.5 years, that he's in a pretty good place to meet somebody and to have some basic understanding of how his body works, even how her body works, and kind of what he needs to do to initiate some different, you know, things that he might want and how to take care of his body. And I think, and knowing that makes me feel amazing. It makes me feel amazing that he can have pleasure in his life, that he can be responsible, that he understands. And it didn't come after one conversation.
Yeah.
Some things did. Sure. Some things came really quickly. Other things we're still talking about. We're like, "Do you remember that conversation?" He was like, I'm like, "Okay." You know, kind of going back to, "Okay, well, let's talk about it again." And, you know, one of the other teaching tools I use is videos or TV shows, movies, anything like that, because that's just a a natural way to talk about romance. Like, what do you think is happening in this scene? Or let's take a look at this together. And it can be a little cringy at first, but it's, you know, sometimes these conversations will come up when you look at them and it's like, do you know what's going on here? It's another way to kind of broach uncomfortable topics. But I think sometimes in our, just our natural life, we can use these learning opportunities to teach our kids different things. So I think, you know, again, for me, the most important thing is what's the message that I want them to get, and know that we're just opening up such an opportunity for our kids to get amazing information from us and also build that relationship that's on a deeper level where we can share so many parts of us with them and them with us, hopefully, you know, over the course of their lives.
Yeah, that's just amazing, Laura. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know a lot of parents, myself included, you know, when your child is diagnosed when they're younger, have this moment almost like flash before your eyes of like, what will my child's future look like? Are they going to go to college? Are they going to get married? Are they going to have children? Are they going to have a career that they love? Or are they going to have moments in their life that feel really special, you know, with another person? And you don't have those answers in that moment. You have to trust that you're going to do your best one day at a time and that they'll have the experiences that they need to have and that they want to have in their life. And what you said about this is not going to happen from one conversation, but little conversations along the way, from teaching them to eat food that makes them feel good, to take good care of their bodies, to understanding how their bodies, you know, engage in different experiences and what they can do to be proactive in that is just so important. And it can happen at any age. Mm-hmm. Is what I really heard you say today. Mm-hmm. Like, it can happen at any age. So thank you so much. Is there one final piece of advice that you would give parents as your parting shot there? If they only take away one thing today, like, what would you really want them to remember?
That's a great question. I think I started by saying this. I think it's really important that we remember that what's happening in your child's body is the same thing that's happening with their same-aged peers. I think it's really important because, yeah, you know, those milestones we all remember, right? When the kids didn't meet their milestones. And that was like the first thing. It's like, how did this happen? And I just remember like my son being 6 months old and not being able to sit. And how did I know that? I was a new mommy. And it was because his friend could sit up straight. And I was like, why isn't he sitting right? What's going on right now? Right.
Yeah.
And those are like that. We're all aware of that, but what's happening in terms of sexually, what's happening in their bodies is the same. It is the same, unless they have some other like comorbid, you know, diagnosis going on. And some people do. So if that's the case, then that's an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
But what's happening in their bodies is the same as their same age peers. And they have the need for the same information based on their biological age, not perceived ability, right? So the takeaway is they have the need for the same information based on their age, not what we think they'll understand.
Yeah. Right?
The way that we teach it, the way that we have to review it, all of the different ways that we have to deliver this information, it's going to be different. And it's going to be over the course of however long it takes for them to get the information.
Yeah.
We might need to go back and review it again and again, but the need is the same. And if we remember that, then it's sort of easy to figure out where do I start? Where, whatever age they are, what's going on in that 12-year-old's body probably is going to happen in my 12-year-old or 6-year-old or 20-year-old or 5-year-old. Okay. It doesn't matter. It's the whole span of a lifetime. And I think that's exactly what we talk about. And they have the same hopes and dreams that we have. Right? To remember that we're talking about human beings.
Yeah.
Beings who have a biological need for pleasure, who have a human right to their own sexuality. And that's all encompassing, not a sexual act, but it's the way that we feel, the way that we dress, the way that we express ourselves, the way that we talk, the way that we move. It's all of that. Right.
Yeah.
So if we look at ourselves as these amazing, beautiful sexual beings, and that everybody deserves to be able to, you know, embrace that part of themselves. And how do we as parents give our kids the information and support that they need so that they can be everything that they were intended to be on this earth? that's the place that I come from, and try to give the most positive message about them just being the most amazing people that they can be, and us being pretty awesome parents for being in this conversation, because a lot of parents aren't even willing to listen to something like this, never mind just sit down and have a conversation with their kids. So, you know, the last thing I would say is, you know, kudos to all of you who are listening to this podcast and all of the other podcasts that Sarah does that, you know, put out there. How can we just gain information that we can just make things a little easier for us and a little easier for our kids, and, you know, have the best possible lives that we can all have?
I feel like I need to give you a standing ovation for that, Laura. It was so important for people to hear that and so powerful. And one of the things I always say is your child can do anything, but you might need to throw your timeline out the window. Right? Like, they're capable, they can learn, they can grow, they can change, they can experience, but it may not be at the timeline you have in mind. They may need to take their own time, and their learning process might take longer than the one you had or that you thought you would give them. And who cares? Throw the timeline out the window and teach the child that's right in front of you, no matter how old they are. Amazing. Laura, if people are listening to this and they're thinking, oh my goodness, I really need to speak to Laura because I need help, how can they find you? What is the best way?
Thank you so much. So I have a website. My business is called All Ability Wellness, and that is my website. So it's www.allabilitywellness.com. That's the best way to reach me. If somebody wants to email me, it's basically laura@allabilitywellness.com. That's the best way to reach me. And they can contact me and see what different services I offer. Like I said, I do work primarily in the state of New York with self-directed individuals. And those are people who have a stipend through the office for people with developmental disabilities. And I do direct billing in small group and individual classes, but I also work with, you know, private pay clients on Zoom or in person. So, you know, I'm open to that. And I've been working recently with a lot of organizations and doing some staff trainings and also trainings in group homes. So if anybody has any interest in that, they can certainly reach out to me, and I'm happy to discuss more.
Amazing. Laura, thank you for being here and giving everyone so much valuable insight into what for a lot of people is an uncomfortable topic. And you made it, you took the pressure off today and made it seem doable and achievable for so many people, and certainly for me too. So thank you so much for being here. I know that this episode will probably start stirring up a lot of questions. So if your inbox is exploding, we can always do this again. And it would be my absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much. Everyone who's listening, thank you so much for listening. But remember, listening is not enough. I want you to take one thing that you learned on this episode and actually apply it in your life. Because as you do that, you're going to realize, oh, this is going really well, actually, or this is not going well and I need some help. But you're not going to do that just by information gathering. You have to actually get into the pit with your kids and talk to them about the uncomfortable things and see where you're at and see where you need help. And remember, if you need help, there's no shame in it. There's no judgment. We are here. So thank you for listening. Have a beautiful day. Take care. If today's show resonated with you, please leave a review through your favorite podcast provider, as it's an important step in allowing new listeners to find us when they need to hear this message in their own lives.